Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
My big interview today, Mika, world-renowned for his glam pop anthems and iconic falsetto to baritone vocals, is frequently praised as one of the best singer-songwriters of his generation. He became an overnight star with the release of Grace Kelly back in 2007, and his first album, Life in Cartoon Motion, was no less of a success, selling over 5 million copies worldwide. Since then, Mika has continued to produce genre-defying hits, and most recently, he captured the heart of the nation, appearing in Channel 4's The Piano, alongside Claudia Winkleman and classical pianist Lang Lang. When we met earlier this week, I began by asking him what it was that tempted him to get involved in the reality TV show.
That's a really good question. And especially, you know, we didn't really know what it was going to turn into. What was so great about it was that the brief was so open. It was the kind of brainchild of a guy called Rich McCraw, who created Bake Off. And he just said, I just want you and Lang Lang listening to these people, playing the piano and listening to their stories and reacting. And we're like, oh, okay, that's it. And he's like, there's no winner. It's not about that. It's about people's stories and the reason why they make music and the reason why they go and play in the middle of a busy station.
I have to say, it didn't look like the glamorous of locations. It looked like you and Lang Lang were sort of trapped in some ante room in the train station.
We were in one of them. They put a sofa in a kind of abandoned kind of chain restaurant, and so we were basically in the kitchens, and no one had any idea because from the camera kind of side, it looked really nice, but it was in the middle of an abandoned kitchen of a fast food restaurant. The other one was literally like 8 meters squared cubicle next to the public toilets. It's stuck between a Pret-a-Manger and a Burger King, and
nice.
But that was what was so great about it, because it was really, we felt like we were witness these people performing and talking about their lives without them being competitive, without them coming out to seek 15 minutes of fame. So they showed up as their true selves, and they changed. You know, they were softer.
It's so true, because one of the things you get really tired of with a lot of reality shows is the sort of hardcore competition. And I felt that The Piano was just chock-a-block full of just incredible stories. I remember the boy from the Isle of Wight, you know, who'd had the really difficult experience with drugs and everything. I wondered for you, in the course of the series, who stood out the most?
I love Jay. Honestly, the good thing about Jay was that it really meant a lot to him and this whole process. And the more he found out what was going on, and the more I got to know him, the more kind of open he began to be. And he kind of changed. Even the way he played music changed. There was another guy called Sean, who was also brought to the Royal Festival Hall. And he changed. When we sat together in a coaching, me and Sean, and we started to play the piano, And I said, listen, play it really soft. Listen to it. And he started to play. And I was like, okay, now breathe and play the piano. And he started to play. He almost started to cry. And he was like, I didn't know this instrument could do that. I had no idea. He plays most of the time on a keyboard. It goes and uses a keyboard. And it was just, it completely changed his whole relationship with the piano and with the way he makes music. Mm. It was just such a strong human experience.
And speaking of musical genius and piano, I mean, both those words are you know, what are applied to Lang Lang, who is your co-presenter. And I think the other thing about this program was that it felt like a really natural, unforced chemistry that the two of you had. I mean, were you surprised and were you a bit in awe of him before you actually got trapped in an ante room next to a public toilet with him?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I was. And also because not only have I seen him perform as an audience member, I've also watched videos of him. Like, he is a remarkable musician, Lang Lang. He is somebody who has lived his entire life playing the piano. His first performance was when he was 4 years old. And this project for him was so different to anything he'd ever done before that at first I felt like he was a little bit, you know, reticent, or he didn't quite know where it was going to go. And then we started to get friendly in front of the camera because we had never met each other before. We met each other walking in to that room.
Wow.
And to film. And then he started to kind of, you know, he started to revel in this thing. And he was like, oh, wow, there's so many people, there's so much life, there's so much humanity. And he got more and more joyful about it and more generous.
And interestingly, you know, you're not that far apart, you and Lang Lang. I mean, perhaps he's slightly got the edge on you as a classical pianist. some might say you're a bit of a jack of all genres. But you know, although you're often described as a pop artist, you are classically trained as a pianist and vocalist. I know that you play jazz too. You're about to headline the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. You've also played electronic music at festivals. So, I mean, do you think that sort of element of diversity in terms of the music that you play is actually something very beneficial? Or is it sometimes, you know, people love to put you in a box, don't they? I mean, I don't mean you specifically, but as an artist, they like to put you in a box.
No, and me specifically. I mean, in general, everybody. I mean, we just have this kind of, it's a blessing and it's also a bit of a challenge. So I wouldn't say curse, but it's a blessing and a challenge. The blessing is that I come from loads of different cultures. Lebanese, Syrian, American, but brought up a bit in France, educated my whole life in the UK and lived in London, and with this weird accent that comes from everywhere and from absolutely nowhere, and I don't even know what I sound like, but all this mix of cultures and influences also happened in music. I started singing when I was, and being trained really seriously about, I think I was kicked out of school. I was about 8 years old. And within a few weeks, I found myself with, you know, a Russian singing teacher. I was trained 4 or 5 hours a day. Within a few months, I was singing at the Royal Opera House, anything from Benjamin Britten to Vaughan Williams to Strauss. And it was classical music. I was obsessed with pop music, obsessed with jazz as a kid, but I was singing classical music. And so all of that is it's just the result. All these kind of contaminations of different styles and different genres is just the result of life.
Mika, you can't say to a woman like me, I was thrown out of school at 8, without expecting me to go, Mika, why were you thrown out of school at the age of 8? That seems a particularly precocious age to be expelled, if that was the case. And how much was that and your peripatetic lifestyle, how much did that impact on you growing up and shape your ambition?
Oh, it was so much. I had so many, a lot of problems when I was in terms of learning disabilities when I was younger. And I was unfortunate enough to find myself with quite an intolerant teacher. And we had just moved over from France. We had some issues in our family. And so there was a lot of change and there was quite a bit of trauma in the family. And I found myself in this school with a really intolerant teacher. And I just started to shut down. My dyslexia and the symptoms of my dyslexia just got worse and worse and worse. I went from having, you know, being able to sight read to completely not being able to sight read, being able to spell to not being able to read or write.
My goodness.
And I just started to shut down. And it just shows you that the environment can exacerbate certain learning disabilities and make them really kind of spiral. And it got to the point where I was seen as stupid at school, and it was certainly told I was. And in fact, when I left school, I found another way. My mother was actually with my mom. She was just like, you need to find something else to do. Okay, you're having problem with math and reading and writing. Let's leave that aside for a second. Let's find another way of building up a discipline, building up a value system for yourself. And music was the way. She was like, now express yourself with music. Okay, because I stopped talking for a while to protect myself. I went into myself. I started to sing, I started to play piano, and it opened me up again.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So what you watched people going through on the piano program was actually very much it, but only in a microcosm, what you've been through yourself.
It was exactly the same thing, different versions of the same of a similar thing. And I think that's why, to me, it's so important to tell that story.
And it wasn't, it wasn't just your teacher, was it? I mean, you've spoken in the past about feeling like an outsider at a young age and also being the victim of bullying when moving to new places, always being the new guy in the classroom. But not just because of the fact that you came from elsewhere, but because of the way you dressed and presented yourself.
Yeah, and also my sexuality. I mean, even before I understood what those things were, I was always, that was always such a difficult thing with other kids in my class. I think, but, so many of us go through this. We grow up. Hopefully we can deal with it. We don't forget it, though. You know, it's a funny thing. We don't really forget that feeling, which is why I think it's so important to talk about it.
How attached your mother, who you spoke about rather impressively just a moment ago, was Lebanese. And I know that I think you were just a year old when you were forced to leave war-torn Lebanon and move to Paris. But Beirut in Lebanon continues to hold a very strong place in your heart. What is your relationship to Lebanon still? Because obviously it's not in the best of states even at the moment.
It's in the worst of states right now. It's a failed state. My dad is American, but grew up all over the world. My dad was obsessed with Lebanon way before he met my mother. My dad actually went to school there, and so when he met my mother, he was just like, "Okay, you'll do." Then they went back there, and they were living there when they had me. But then when they left, and you're right, I was about one and a half. And it was, I think it was 1985 when they left. I was born in 83. The war was bad. And I always felt like my mother and my dad left a little bit of themselves there because they knew that what they were leaving in Beirut and the Beirut that they knew, they were so afraid that they wouldn't see that again. Mm. So when we ended up in Paris after we moved from Lebanon, we really were in this kind of like bubble of Lebanon, you know, the carpets, the furniture, the food, the Lebanese aunties that smelt of cigarettes, coffee and Elnet hairspray, and the gossip, the talk of war, the talk of politics, the occasional, quite occasional crying, the worries, the laughter, all these different things, the masbahas, the worry beads in the hands, the backgammon games, the screaming arguments between old men who had had too much whiskey, who had been accusing each other of cheating on the backgammon board. That became what I, Fairuz, you know, the music of Fairuz playing in the background, Umm Kulthum, that became what I associated with Lebanon. This kind of, like so many people who leave a place because of war or conflict, there's, you take a bit of it with you, and it lives suspended in your family home, even if it's in the middle of a place like Paris. You know, outside is different to what's inside, and the community finds itself and finds its cultural identity with these little trinkets that they've brought with them.
You described
them, weave them together
very poetically there, that feeling of that thing of leaving something behind. I wondered how you feel about the narrative around refugees, which is often extremely intolerant, with this presumption that people just get up and leave their home country and their families and everything that's shaped them with complete disregard for it, and just think, oh, I'll just pop over there and make some money. You know, I mean, what do you feel about the narrative around migrants and refugees?
I think it's just, I mean, you said it perfectly. It's so easy to kind of like generalize and villainize, and especially to kind of classify everybody as this kind of like very driven, determined, economic migrant out for a better opportunity. It's so complex. Once someone enters refugee status, this is what makes it so astonishing. No matter what the age is, no matter what their sex is, no matter where they come from, so many different reasons.
Gender issues.
Exactly. The average length of time that someone stays in that status is 18 years. That's your whole adolescence into adulthood. That's your whole childhood. There are so many different reasons why someone ends up in that situation, why someone would be mad enough to take such extraordinary measures and such huge life-risking measures. And as a response to that, it's so hard to generalize. And so one of the ways I think that it's really important to humanize the refugee crisis. You know, I've done trips with the UNHCR. One moment that really stuck in my head was when I was standing in a UNHCR welcoming center, which is just, it sounds more comforting than it is. It's quite a daunting place. And this was pretty much at the height of the a refugee exodus from Syria, millions into Lebanon at the time. And I started to speak to different people. My mother was actually with me because I thought she really wanted to see it. And there was a computer technician, there was an engineer, there was a school teacher. But I just stood there and I was like, if I hadn't had this conversation, I would look at this group of about, you know, a few hundred people, and I wouldn't be able to discern any differences between them. But going in and just starting to talk, I was like, oh my goodness, this is so human, this is so difficult.
And yeah, and it is about putting the real stories to people's lives, isn't it, or giving them a narrative. I talked to Dame Kelly Holmes earlier this week, and I don't know if you know, but this twice gold medal winning Olympic athlete.
Yes,
it took her 30 years to actually come out as a gay woman. She was particularly scarred by her experience in the military when she was a teenager, and was afraid of kind of admitting that she was gay. And you also took some time before coming out, and I wondered what it was that had held you back, what it was that you were fearful of.
It's not easy. It's not always easy. And it's, you know, I never pretended to be anything I wasn't, if we can say that. I mean, my sexuality was a fundamental part of my identity since forever. And inevitably, it was all over my lyrics since the very beginning. It was such a motor for writing lyrics. It was always there. And so it was there, but at the same time, there was also so many other steps that I had to go through as a young adult. There's, you know, personal ones, even familial ones, different stages that I felt like I had to go through and that a lot of people feel like they have to go through. And suddenly I found myself in a place where it was just about answer the question now. I'm like, well, but my music is answering the question in the way that I know how to handle it at this precise stage. No, answer the question now. I think it's, I got there eventually, and I think it's good to get there, and I'm grateful for it. I'm not grateful for that pressure beforehand. It wasn't that got me there, let's put it that way. Mm. It wasn't a journalist pressuring me or having an opinion on whether or not I was assuming my sexual orientation label. And I think we need to be more sensitive about it. Mm. The industry has changed. I had things that happened to me that made me also kind of reticent in the past. Are those same things happening? I think less, at least in the UK and in the US.
When you say you had things happen to you, do you mean that you felt that in some way, you know, if you were out as homosexual, that it would impact on your career? Did people suggest that to you? Or
People did suggest that to me, but I wasn't afraid of that. I mean, you know, my first album had songs like Billy Brown and Grace Kelly. I mean, it's just, you know, that wasn't what worried me. I just think that the process of coming out is different to everybody, and it needs to be handled sometimes with care. Also really happy that I find that the industry is more tolerant nowadays.
We talked at the beginning about the kind of diverse nature of your career and your musical tastes and all of that. And I think it's sort of summed up by the fact that the last time people might have seen you in public, aside from the piano, was in the Eurovision interval last time around. And then your most recent project was a film score for the French movie Princes of the Desert. You've also been working on your first French language album, I think, and a new English album. What's driving you, Mika? What do you want?
I don't know. I want to feel like my ideas and creativity can make me happy. I want to feel that buzz of coming up with an idea, collaborating with people, coming up with ideas with other people, and then turning them into something. And that kind of moment of elation that you feel when you're 15 years old and you're writing a song at the piano and you just feel like you've just transformed something, that makes you feel happy. It makes you feel like a superhero. And I don't want to lose that. And if it takes a certain amount of discipline and a certain kind of fantasy and folly to keep that and to procure that in yourself as you get older, because, you know, age is like gravity. It kind of takes your spirit and hammers it down a little bit. And so you have to resist it and stay high and stay a bit mad. I just want to be happy. It's just, you know, it's always about figuring out how.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do it.